Welcome to the Humans in AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor Laorga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together.
Hi, Marty. Thank you very much for joining to Humans in AI podcast, hosted by AI Frontier Network and by me, Flor. So I appreciate that you accept our invitation. It's great to have you here. So let's start. So I would like to, if you could share a little bit of the beginning of your story as an entrepreneur, because, well, for what I've seen, you've been, well, you're a CEO in Vantik right now, but you built more things before. And yeah, so what was the motivation behind that? What is the background of it?
My background is electrical engineering. And I got into software very quickly. In fact, I took a special software programming course in high school, which was unusual at the time. And what I did was work for a company called Candle in LA. And then I had a total of five companies I've worked for. Two of them did very well, unicorn status. Probably the most well-known is Forte Software, which was established to make the internet work for mission-critical applications like home banking. Through my career, I think the consistency is I worked for companies that open up new markets, like it was database market with Ingress, the internet with Forte, and now with Vantik, we're opening up the real-time AI market. And what real-time means is how do you use AI to address things like effects of climate change, such as floods or droughts, and save lives. So I've had five software companies, three of them I've run, some very, very large successes in terms of opening up new markets. And that's what we're doing today.
Wow. Interesting. It's very impressive. So what was, I like to ask these kind of questions because I think that is always a moment or a situation or a person that influenced you to follow this path. Or it's been just yourself, maybe.
Sure. Okay. So I went to a school called Cooper Union. Cooper Union is an engineering school. I went there partially because it was free. And at the time I had no money. It was all scholarship if you got in. It's a very selective school. And partially because it was very high end in terms of what they taught you in engineering. And that school was founded by Peter Cooper. And Peter Cooper founded that school, I think it was 1860, with the idea of getting these students, these top talented students, to use engineering to have a positive influence on the world. And I think that there's no coincidence that Vantik, my current company, was formed to basically help the world deal with current challenges from climate change, healthcare, defense, and even companies trying to do the next generation systems. And what we do is use software in real time using AI to address challenges. And so the foundation was built for me at Cooper Union to do something good in the world. Now, having said all that, also, I strongly believe to get the right people and to be successful, you have to have strong financial success. So our plans are to grow this company incredibly large. And right now, we're unique in our ability to use AI in real time as things are occurring.
As you said, that you are like very good at using AI in real time. So can you give me an example, for example?
Sure. Okay, I'll give you two examples. One is in Japan, we do an application was built by NTT Data, one of our partners, to basically address challenges, environmental challenges as they occur. For example, if there's a flood, get the first responders to the right place at the right time, getting inputs from everywhere, weather inputs, sensors out in the field, even social media showing where the problems are, getting the first responders, the people who are going to save lives and help address the situation to the right place at the right time and be very dynamic about it because a flood can change very quickly. A bridge can go down and then you've got to guide them a different way. So we do that for all of, we do it for Tokyo now and a city outside of Tokyo. And this year it'll be introduced to all of Japan. Another situation is in Saudi Arabia. a smart city called CAFDA, King Abdullah Financial District, 10,000 cameras monitoring for nefarious events. Could be somebody carrying a gun, could be somebody who looks very suspicious. So you identify those individuals and then you track them throughout the facility called tag and track. Also, we could identify bags that are left alone, people who collapse and have obvious problems in the street, etc. So that use case is being built right now in Saudi Arabia, in Riyadh, for the King Abdullah Financial District. There are two examples of situations or applications that Vantic builds that uses AI in real time.
Good. That's very good, actually. So you've been a part of what you're doing with Vantec. You found as well Forte, right? Do you have any learning lessons or lessons that you've learned through from Forte to Vantec? Do you have any or advice experience that you would like to share?
Be foresightful, have an idea of where the future is going, and then don't give up because it's never a clear path to success. There are always challenges. Market dynamics cannot be predicted, they're going to change. So, for example, right now we have AI everywhere. Everyone's talking about AI, but there are really some other challenges that we have to deal with, such as which AI systems to use, what's the direction that's being taken in AI. And then we got to figure out how we add AI as it changes to specific solutions. So you might have a solution, as I said, in the Middle East, where we're basically detecting when there are problems, primarily with people. But there are newer technologies. For example, if somebody has a gun hidden, then you might want to see or use X-rays, I'm sorry, radar, to see whether or not there's something under their vest. And so that would be new technology you add. So it's identifying the problems that exist and then making it flexible so that you can adjust as technologies change. So it's really adapting to the changes in the world, both market-wise and technology-wise. And don't give up. Just push as hard as you can and keep going.
That I think is very easy to say, but not that easy to do it. But it's a very, I think there's a reality though. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
very, the hard reality is that. Thank you. So you said that your goals is always to develop technologies. So to, as you said, you are addressing the climate change, the healthcare issues. Why do you want to ensure that people remain central to this process? Even that we have all this noise of AI, and AI is kind of, doing most of the things actually right now.
When you say involve people, I assume you mean in terms of making decisions and being involved as AI is acting in the real world. And there are two answers I have to that. One is you can't always do that. Sometimes you have to act immediately. So, for example, if you're guiding people in a disaster, a certain direction, and a bridge collapses that you were guiding them over that bridge, you've got to re-guide them automatically, immediately. No human interaction, really. But there are other times that, say, for example, in a defense situation, that a missile is coming your way and the AI analyzes it, says it's safe to intercept that missile. And if you don't, here are the consequences. But before the interceptor drone or whatever it is that's going to destroy that missile is launched, you might want to ask the commander whether or not that's the action to take. And so, therefore, there are situations where you automatically take actions. And there are situations where you will involve humans. Another one where you would involve humans is the AI might recommend a certain action for a doctor to take when there's an emergency, possibly in the ER room, yet the doctor has to authorize that action before it's taken. So both are true.
Yeah, before we were talking as the advice that you gave before that never give up, right? So as an entrepreneur, how hard is the journey of entrepreneur is not an easy journey. For example, at Ford, I thought you have there were people that didn't believe in your project because they were too complex, right? What was the why do you keep going? I know that you said you don't give up, but what is actually the drive behind that motivation?
You have to have belief in yourself. So when we were first getting funding for Forte, this was in the early 90s, there was a big question on the part of investors, venture capitalists, whether or not the internet was real. Now, that sounds humorous at this time, but then it was true. In fact, I had one large venture capitalist say to us, "This internet thing is going to be a flash in the pan. It's going to be like CB radio. It's not going to be real. It's going to be a toy." And we had to really believe in ourselves, and we did. We were 90% sure, but there were no guarantees. When I was being told, "Oh, the internet's good for email, and that's about it," because people don't think of all the use cases. Maybe e-commerce was obvious, but social media was not. And therefore, you've got to continue to believe in yourself and the strategy you have and just continue to implement it. And there's a reason why there aren't all that many entrepreneurs that are successful. And the reason is too many of them give up too early. They don't realize that you've got to figure out, try this, try that, do this, do that, and be tenacious.
And do you think that with AI it's easier to be a founder today, to build things, to build companies, but at the same time, even as easier, it's there's as well more and more companies that fail. There's not as there's more it's there are more new more opportunities to be an entrepreneur and build a company, but at the same time they're not way more successful companies as in the past. Or they're not that well known, let's say.
But I don't know if it's really easier. My experience is, having done it a few times, it's always difficult. There's always challenges of various types, whether it be funding, market access, having the market move in your direction, getting the right people, et cetera, et cetera. It's never really easy, and I'm not sure it's any easier today. What is easier is access to the technology. You can build things faster. AI helps you do that. So that part is easier, but still identifying what to do and doing it effectively is not simple.
Yeah, definitely it's not. So across all your ventures, was there a pivot moment or turning point that most changed the way that you lead, decide, or innovate as a leader that you are?
There is a commonality. I'm not sure this directly answers your question, but there's a commonality I've seen multiple times, and that is, in an early market, there's a point where the market takes off and it's noticeable and you have exponential growth. At Vantic, we're in that point right now. We've seen in the last 6 months an incredible set of opportunities come our way. In fact, one of our biggest concerns, how do we meet all these opportunities? All of a sudden, real-time systems, building them using AI, is in vogue. It's what people are looking to do. It's not just generative AI for doing research. It's how do we help monitor and control the world? And that's accelerating like crazy. At Forte, it was at some point the internet was accepted, and all of a sudden the demand was incredible. So at the very beginning of the early adapters, but then when the mass markets start coming your way, it's like a tidal wave. And I've seen that occur multiple times, as I said. So that to me is a commonality and a unique one that pretty much all the software startups I've seen have gone through. And I suspect social media and other companies, it's the same. Knee of the curve occurs, and all of a sudden you experience exponential growth.
Yeah, so talking a little bit about the challenges of AI, as a CEO, you obviously have a team, right? So how challenging, or maybe it was not for you to use AI or integrate AI in all the workplace, basically? If for the people and the employees, like how challenging was that to accept, like, oh, now we're going to use AI?
It's an innovation that we're well prepared for. My guys have been using AI forever. I have some top-notch software developers in Silicon Valley, and many of them were AI programmers of different types. Now, generative AI made a big change 2.5 years ago, about was when the change really occurred. And it was a bit of a different approach to how you build systems, but like I said, a bit. It wasn't a total change. It makes the systems more intelligent, but you still got to do the monitoring, using the AI, using computer vision, for example, orchestrating the results. But what you have in the middle is the ability of a system giving you far better recommendations on what actions to take. And that made a difference for sure. And it was something that we were well suited to integrate because we had the ability to build, or what we do is we build real-time systems. Vantic is a platform that enables you to do it. And so we were able to incorporate it, generative AI, very quickly. But as I said, we've started building this system 10 years ago. And the basic intent of building real-time systems to address worldwide challenges was there from the get-go.
This was actually like a very good point. Like actually, you are in a Silicon Valley, so it's like obviously you have the best engineers, right? So, do you think that's obviously it is, but big advantage over the whole world? Because before AI has been for a long time, but I think the boom has been a few years ago. It was not before. Before, as you said, like people were not believing in even in technology. How do you envision that it would be such a big thing, AI?
You asked me about the challenge. I thought you were leading towards getting the right people, and that we've got the experience. Five software companies and my co-founder, Paul Butterworth, and I have built these engineering teams before who know how to build highly reliable, highly scalable systems, as we did at Forte and previous companies. The challenge today is keeping up with the amount of change that's occurring. AI has evolved crazy. And you've got to be able to incorporate the new changes immediately. As one example, what DeepSeek has shown and what I believe strongly is going to be the future is AI inferencing, not the creation of the models, but the actual inferencing is going to be everywhere, including the smartphone, on the edge, in the emergency room, in the fire truck going to address an emergency. These types of systems are going to have to be used without connection to a cloud. And they're going to be verticalized. So it's a fire problem. It's going to know exactly what to do there. That's a major trend in the industry, is getting these inferencing models everywhere. It's a benefit. We do that, but it's a challenge. Keeping up with the technology is definitely a challenge. We're able to do it, and we think we're able to do it very effectively.
Having all this noise, because there's a lot of noise about AI and everything that's happening right now. So how do you guys keep focused?
We have some good engineers who know what's really viable and what's not. To your point, there is a lot of noise and people are talking about AGI, which I question. That's a whole nother subject. But using the technology effectively is a bit challenging. And we have the engineers and the talent to figure out what can work in what situation, what is viable, and then we implement it.
Very efficient. So now with the data and AI becoming central to making decisions, right? Decision making. So how do you think about ethical responsibility as a leader? Do you think that sometimes you had to kind of leave it, drop it, and just keep move on, or you're really very straight on the ethical part as well?
I'm sorry, the ethical part of
The
AI.
ethical responsibility, yeah, the ethical part of AI and all these things.
Yeah. Let me give you a comparison of our, and this really exemplifies our thinking. So you look at autonomous vehicles, and by different accounts, autonomous vehicles are going to decrease the amount of deaths in driving by dramatic numbers, say 80%. The problem is the other 20% might be a different 20%. And therefore, they might have lived that 20% that died. But the vehicles have some problems and make some bad decisions. So you look at the overall situation and you say, we're saving 80% of the lives overall. And that's what you have to accept. There's a little bit of similarity here with AI. AI will make some bad decisions. But if overall its decisions are good and it can save lives in emergencies like fires or any kind of environmental disaster, then it's a good thing. And so that to me is a high level perspective. You don't hear that too often. But yes, you have to accept that it's not always going to be accurate. Having said all that, there are ways to make it more accurate. And so, for example, we have a patent on getting rid of hallucinations. It's a voting algorithm with multiple AI systems, and we believe we could reduce hallucinations by 90% or more. So there are also techniques you can use to actually make the AI more trustworthy.
But that's kind of very, I'm still processing. It was very good answer, actually. Yeah, because it's a bit different than what people can respond in these kind of things. So I'm still, when you say, I know that you don't hear this often, I'm like, yeah, sure, you're right. So that's kind of, so I will like you say that you are dealing with AI hallucinations, that you guys have a systems that avoid them or remove them almost, not the whole thing because it'd be impossible, but maybe almost everything. So I like very interested in the AI hallucinations because I feel like, for example, with ChatGPT, right? You use that, and I feel like there's not much difference between the AI hallucination and the human mind. So, what is your perspective about that? Like, how connected we are from AI as humans?
It's interesting. The large language models, of course, are based upon mankind's knowledge that exists on the internet and elsewhere. And so, therefore, it reflects human thinking, and humans do hallucinate. Let's face reality here. Sometimes our imagination goes wrong, and we have solutions that are wrong. One of the ways to get around it, so let's say, for example, you want a solution to a particular problem. Instead of just asking one person for it, one doctor, let's say, what about asking three people who are independent? And if they all agree, then the reliability is much higher and you can reduce the number of hallucinations. That's what we do. We can have multiple LLMs kind of vote. And if three out of three agree, we could say that's pretty reliable and let's do it. You're not going to your point, it reflects human thinking. Because it reflects what's on the internet. So there are going to be hallucinations because that's what we do as humans. You just got to figure out the best you can how to address that.
This was as well a good answer. I know that now advantage, we already talked this in the beginning, but I would like to ask you something related with it. It's like, so you are addressing all these climate change problems or healthcare issues or all these modern problems that are happening right now. It's been always there, but now more. So what human promise or moment inspired that direction? Like, why are you doing it? Apart from, I know that I am helping the world, but there's some more like internal motivation, for example.
It's my way of giving back. It's my form of philanthropy. So I had success before and I didn't work for a number of years. I learned how to fly planes, became a pretty good skier, enjoyed myself. But I also had a lot of time to think. And what I came across was the concept that we can use technology to address a lot of the problems that are occurring in the world, like climate change directly or the effects of climate change. And so what drove me is, nobody else is really thinking this way. Why don't we, given my software background and Paul's software background, why don't we form a company that can actually address these problems, these real-time problems? So that's what really got me going, was saying we can do something that nobody else has done, enable systems to be built very quickly that can address these worldwide challenges, save lives. Also, save food supply and air quality, et cetera. There are many things that software can do in real time, and nobody was addressing it or is real still to this day. We have the most advanced platform to build these systems by far. And so we have the ability to make a difference in the world, and that's what drove me.
So you talk about success, right? Being successful. How the definition of success have shifted in all your entrepreneurial journey from the beginning until now? What is the definition of success for you right now?
That's an interesting question. I would say it's changed a bit over time. At the beginning, success was primarily financial. So when I was in my 20s and 30s, hey, let's make a big company and do it with software, which of course is my background and my expertise. Over time, I became a lot more focused on doing things that could really make a difference in this world. And I think that's just maybe a level of growth or maturity. And to the point where Vantic has that as our primary goal. So it's been an evolutionary process where now I view that as probably the primary reason why I'm building this company called Vantic, to make the world a safer and more performing place for humans, because there are real problems out there. Climate change is real. If we don't address it, there are going to be lots of people dying, and it's accelerating. How do we address these kinds of issues? And technology can be brought to the forefront to do it. It's clear to me. And we're doing it now. So that's what drives me.
Yeah, actually, I can notice now how hot it's right now too as well. I also feel the climate change very much. So looking to the future, how do you envision AI in our daily lives? Like maybe from now, from 5 years now, more or less? How do you envision the how AI gonna change the way that we live, basically?
There are two ways. One is making humans far more productive, whether it be developing drugs or managing companies. AI is going to make it so much easier as an add-on to what humans make decisions, or even to some degree, driving the decisions. The other way, which we're involved in, is operating the world better. And by better, not just more efficiently, but safer. And of course, that's what Vantic is about. It's going to be major. These changes are so significant, and you have so much effort. We all know this, how much effort in the world is being put into this, how many brains are focused on this. It's like an incredibly large amount. And therefore, this worldwide talent and the ability to connect over the internet and open source, et cetera, is going to make an incredible difference as it accelerates. And that's what's happening. So, in 5 years, we're going to be far more productive. Companies will be far more productive. The world will be safer, but it's a one-way street, and there's a lot to do beyond that.
Yeah, that's actually also, I was thinking about it. Sometimes I think about it, so I like to ask these questions to get information, and then you get smarter when you listen to other perspectives. Yes, I've got two more questions for you. I would like you to, because this is kind of right now, mostly in the Silicon Valley and San Francisco, everything is like everybody, there are a lot of startup founders, right? So I would like you to give them an advice about how to keep yourself grounded in all this AI no noise and stay grounded in their values and purpose. Like, there's a lot of with the VCs, investors, a lot of things going on. But when you are in your early stage as a founder, you can get very lost.
I would say not can get, but you will get. Founding a company, of which I've done multiple times, is a real challenge. And it's no question that things are going to change and you have to adapt very quickly. Like when Vantic was founded, there was no generative AI. And therefore, we had to, when it came into existence, we had to deploy it and deploy it very quickly into our systems. Perhaps we were a little bit lucky in that we had the architecture to do it and to do it very quickly. But there are other things we had to do that we didn't plan for. For example, we have what's called an event broker, our own event broker that communicates node to node in a mesh network. We thought we could use standard technologies, but we couldn't. And we had to spend a lot of effort to do it. So, as a founder, you have to be willing to adjust and adapt in whatever way it is possible and not lose faith. There are times when there was one time, for example, when our chief technology officer, Paul Butterworth, we had a major task to do, and we were figuring out what the task was. And he came back to me and he said to me, "Marty, this is not possible. We can't do this." And I said, "Paul, if we're going to be successful, we have to do it." He went off and he spent 3 months designing this next generation system capability. And sure enough, he did it and figured out how to do it. So there was an example where some people might have given up, but we didn't. And it took a few months, but we figured out there is a way to solve this complex problem. So don't give up. Figure out, be creative, figure out alternative solutions, whether it's yours or open source or some other company you're going to work with, and solve that problem and move on. And the problems are going to exist. So be tenacious, don't give up, expect challenges in all fronts, and just do your best to address them. And if you're creative and focused, you'll get there.
I love it. Don't give up.
Don't give up.
So, I got one open question for you. Basically, it's like, We touch different aspects of your journey, some more like professional, some more like personal. But this one is if you would like to share something that we haven't talked about. So it's basically you can share, you can, well, something that you would like to share about your professional life, your personal life, or it's an open one for you.
The thing that I have discovered over time is that there is no alternative to hard work. Now, I know this is very specific, but there are a lot of people out there who think, oh, I've got a great idea. I'm going to do it. I'll spend some time doing it. There's somebody else as creative as you who's going to do something similar, but they're going to put twice the effort in, and they will be more likely to be successful. So it's not just don't give up. But put all of your capabilities and all of your focus to doing it. And there is no alternative here, guys. Sorry, wish there was an easy way, but there's not. The world is highly competitive, and there are people as smart and as capable as you. So, really hard work. Simple answer, but that's what I have found over the years. And when I hire people, it's one of my key questions. Are you willing to put the effort in?
Yes, well, yes, actually, I think that's also determination. I think that's what determination helps a lot with that, the consistency of just keep pushing, even it's, oh my God, so much. It's amazing. Okay. Thank you very much, Maria. It's been great having you in the podcast. It was great meeting you. So thank you very much for making time for this.
Laura, you're very welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Humans in AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.